Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Grind Show. I'm your host, and today I'm joined by Herman Pretorius. Herman, how are you? Happy?
I am puzzled by the developments in our country, especially our first story of number one or Ubaba or Jacob, as we call him. But I must say, I'm trying to wrap my head around it. But other than that, I'm fine.
Indeed. And Miss Sarah Gott. Sarah, how are you?
Fine.
That was very low energy, Sarah. So today we're going to start off talking about Zuma, then we're going to talk a little bit about Swaziland, and then we're going to finish off by talking about Ethiopia. So it's very much a sort of Africa-based
For a
episode today.
moment, for a moment, I thought we were on the podcast with Jeb Bush. The energy levels were so low.
That's a very 2016 joke, but I like
Oh.
it. So today, of course, we're talking about the big story that's got everyone in the country talking, and that is old Zoom Zoom, former President Jacob Zuma, Ubaba, the big cheese, the old man. He's known by many names. He has been found guilty by a court of something. I think this is the first time in the democratic dispensation that he has been found guilty of something by a court, and it happens to be contempt of court for his failure to comply with an order of the Constitutional Court to honor a summons to appear before the State Capture Commission. We all said that this was a big deal when he was ordered to appear before the State Capture Commission and then just said, "Make me." And the court. The court then was forced to defend itself because the very legitimacy of the entire justice system, I think, was very directly placed on the line. If it was just allowed to slide and Zuma stayed away and nothing ever came of it, then he really would be above the law. So the Constitutional Court has found that he is in contempt of court, and they have in fact sentenced him to a 15-month jail term. So I'm going to start with you, Herman. What do you make of this? And do you think Zuma will end up in jail?
I don't think he will end up in jail, but I must say, I'm one of the reasons I'm struggling to wrap my head around this is there are a few scenarios that can play out that various, parts of the ANC might want to see playing out. So there's the idea that the Ramaphosa camp want to see him go to jail, because that would underscore this, the great reformer. At last, 4D chess is
Right.
paying off.
It would really boost Cyril's power within the ANC, I would think, because he would show that he really does have teeth and can punish his enemies.
Yes, and the markets will respond favorably, at least as far as noise goes. I doubt it'll respond favorably in, as far as actual investments and thing goes, but Cyril's stock will go up. So that's if he goes to that Cyril people want number one in jail. Scenario of Cyril's people do not want number one in jail. He was head of military intelligence for Nkonto Sizwe during the struggle. Not only does he know where all the bodies are buried, but he knows who buried them. So the fact that you've got the generation of Mbeki still in power. It's the same generation. It's not a new generation. The sins of the 1980s still cling to the people in power now because it's the same generation of leadership of the ANC as it was then, essentially. The fact that Zuma really knows every dirty little secret about the struggle years might give many within the ANC of all camps pause, because if you're operating outside of the law, I think it's oftentimes the case that you overplay your hand in terms of, an odd murder here or there, a bit of corruption here or there. So that's a scenario they don't want him to go to prison. Then you've got this scenario of Ramaphosa, not Ramaphosa, Zuma wants to go to prison. He becomes a martyr for the RET faction. He is the great Ubaba who, you know, he's the radical street cred receiving fighter of his day for the quote unquote black child. It could be actually, his stock can go up. And it could also be the fact that the case that he would prefer rather to go that route than to suffer the indignity of being summoned to the Zondo Commission to answer questions. And then the last possibility, as I see it, is that he might not want to go to jail because, Nick, as you pointed out, just before we came on air, that sort of gamble might backfire. Instead of gaining street cred and seeing his stock rise, he could be an Ace Magashule guy that when he tries to rally the troops think this is a very, very awkward banner to rally around and they just don't pitch. So is he going to go to jail? I can't see it happening, but I'm not sure why. And these are the four sort of things, the perspectives I look at it, and I have no idea which one's right.
So, Sarah, following up on that, it really seems to me like this has kind of forced the country's justice system to a point of crisis. Mm. If Jacob Zuma is not arrested and taken to jail,
I think we've lost Nick's frozen in the mists of time. Let me respond anyway. I think the problem is that we could see scenarios playing out as Herman has mentioned. You've got scenarios playing out where it may start one way and end another. In other words, he may go to jail with the martyrdom, with the Mkhonto Wesizwe, we're all being very sort of beating their chests and doing war cries. But a bit like Ace, but on an obviously grander scale, is if he is in jail for any length of time, and any length of time doesn't have to be actually all that long, it kind of people, you know, lose interest because there'd be very little benefit in it. So that's one possibility. What the Constitutional Court done is sort of salvage its potential reputational problem by giving out a very, very firm, very strongly worded judgment, which includes jail time and not even suspended, which is quite interesting. So it does present a problem. The police are in complete disarray from a managerial point of view. I mean, it's dysfunctional. It's political. It's involved in crime. It's just awful. And for the police have then got to decide, if he doesn't present himself within 5 days, are they going to arrest him? And if they want any credibility, they're not a body that has much credibility, they'll have to it puts them in a very difficult position because they might find themselves actually faced with Carl Niehaus and a couple of, you know, aggressive Mkhonto people. So it could be pretty ugly in a sort of, I don't know, sort of way. But I think the idea, I think probably we're looking, I don't even think one could tell. We're not where Tabu Shape was umpteen years ago. But you never know, there might still be the application for parole on medical grounds at some point. I mean, he's not a young man. He seems to have been relatively well, but he's not a young man. So the response, I don't think anyone can be absolutely sure, but maybe he'll surprise us. Maybe he will present himself because he certainly can't appeal the decision. It's the first time in his legal life that he hasn't been able to appeal the decision. So let's put it this way: the foundation is good. The execution is the matter under question at the moment.
And it's also a tough one to imagine who will arrest him if he refuses, which he is likely to do. I mean, who rocks up at Nkandla arresting him? The theory of this is very interesting, but for once, the practicalities of who actually the handcuff is that's an intriguing thought.
Right. It would probably have to be someone like the Minister of Police. I mean, not right. The Minister of the Commission. Yeah, the Minister. Although he doesn't have a he doesn't have a sort of active role, but the commissioner of police, or the Natal commissioner, or, oh god, it's really is a wait and see, which is really not a satisfactory answer. But I'm sure the ramifications are being discussed in detail as we try and discuss the ramifications.
Right. Sorry about that. My internet fell over for some reason, but I am back, presumably, unless my co-panelists tell me that I'm suddenly not back. But yeah, I think the easiest solution here for the ANC is to fudge this in some way. And I suspect that may be the end result. And that is, you arrest Zuma and then he goes to jail and you claim all the credit. And then 2 weeks later, he's out. And like Shibuya Sheikh, he's on the golf course in a couple of weeks.
or even something like house arrest.
Or you just let him slip out of the country, which is something that has been suggested is going to happen. And you just say,
I hear Eswatini might. I hear Eswatini might have a vacancy at the top.
we'll get there in a second.
That's an evolving story.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of ways this can go, but it really is one of the things that makes me think that the ANC is going to be cautious to act against him, despite the potential benefits for Cyril, is that there's people in the party like JC Duarte who have been caught on microphone basically saying, we can't trust the Zondo Commission, the judiciary is against us, everywhere except basically Chlope is compromised agent of the counter-revolution or something like that. So, I mean, she didn't say that exactly, but she said something to that effect. And so if suddenly one of their own and one of their senior members goes down to the judiciary, I think there's a lot of people in the ANC, like Jesse Duarte, those key swing votes who might back an opponent of Cyril, will go, no, we can't let this go on. I mean, the ANC has been at war with the judiciary for a while. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I think the problem, though, is that one of the areas where the ANC will be caught is the fact that, oh God, what is it, 20 years later, it feels like 20 years later since he first got faced with charges, is that the citizenry will not tolerate, I don't think will tolerate any sort of stratagem to get him out of the country or out of the prison or into the home under house arrest. I think if they try to do anything like that, the outrage would be considerable. It's not, we are not at 2008, 2009, we're so much worse off because of him, sorry.
I wonder, sorry, if we might not be suffering as a country from outrage and scandal fatigue, that you know, he's out of the country, was always going to end this way. I really hear you, and I think the outrage should be significant, but I wonder if South Africans don't suffer from battered wife syndrome enough to just go, the ANC is hitting me less.
We've seen a version of how that might play out with the fact that the Guptas got away. And Gabriel Krause and I had a plan to hire a North Korean destroyer to go and kidnap them back, but that didn't really work out. But
yeah, how is that plan progressing? What was the problem? Was it funding?
Funding, yeah, it was funding.
Nothing. But you see, the problem is the Guptas were just the shady operators. Zuma was the president and the shady operator. That's the difference. I mean, Guptas, I think most people almost don't care whether they end up coming back and being jailed or not. But he sold us to them. I mean, it's like being trafficked.
Yeah, it's a
whole country.
It's a country so free, a market so free, even the cabinet is up for sale. But I must say, that's why I have such a difficult time judging what happens from here, because every possibility, every distinct possibility has its equal and opposite. That also has this merit. So I know people watch this for analysis, and I think we haven't given the whole thing, but it's bloody difficult to see where this goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully they don't do it too quickly, and so that this becomes out of date by the time people watch it.
He's got 5 days to present himself, so it is a period of limbo where everyone can scheme and plot and re-scheme and re-plot.
One firm foothold that I think we can assess as to be a real factor is that if it comes down to the ANC having to make a decision between its own survival and the integrity of the constitutional order, I don't think there's any doubt as to which direction that decision will go. So that's the only firm thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Sucks to be the constitutional order. So there's one more thing I want to just briefly discuss on this. And we've talked about it before, about how Zuma employs the Stalingrad legal defense, right? You fight every single opportunity. So I think the unspoken question has always been, was Zuma the Soviets or the Germans? And of course, the Soviets won in the end, right? So does it actually in fact turn out that the whole time Zuma was the Germans and just prolonging the inevitable?
Yeah, no, look, it had always been a prolonging of the inevitable if you hit the point where jail time was linked to the inability, simply running out of appeal options. And having been decided by the Constitutional Court, he's run out of appeal options. So he played the system. I mean, he sort of went along every step of the way. And there's no more steps to go. So something else has to come into play now.
I must say I'm surprised because a year ago I would have thought that, you know, Zuma will be in his grave long before he's in jail. And maybe that'll still be the case. But at least now it's been brought to a head. And his lawyers...
Yeah, it's what? The Göring option.
Right, right. And it remains to be seen, you know, what the final calculation is as a percentage of GDP of how much Zuma spent on lawyers over the last 20 years or whatever. But anyway.
The thing that is usually in these sorts of things, a very good guideline is who stands to benefit the most. And I can't make that call. It's really a tough one to make. I'm just rambling, but yeah.
Right. Anyway, we shall see once that time period expires whether he has in fact handed himself over. My bet is not, but we'll see. Maybe he will. And then we'll see what the ramifications are. But they will probably be quite – they're going to tell us something about the way South Africa is going. Let's put it that way. So let's move on to our tiny little neighbor, and that being – the formerly known as Kingdom of Swaziland, which is these days called Eswatini. According to the king, that name change was because he said that too many people confused their country with Switzerland. I mean, I guess they're both in the mountains, but I don't see the similarities beyond there. anyway.
Just imagine some poor American going, is this Switzerland? I must say, the people are a lot... more tan than I were expecting. Do you speak English?
Maybe he met a tourist or something who had booked a what they thought was a flight to Switzerland, but it ended up flying to Swaziland. But anyway. So Eswatini is in flames. There have been serious riots against the government, led by groups who are being described in the media as pro-democracy. Government buildings, trucks, including some that were from South Africa that were delivering goods, were set alight. There were clashes between protesters and police, as well as the army. And there are now even rumors circulating that King Mswati has fled the country and is currently hiding in Sandton in Johannesburg. That's unconfirmed as of the moment. But one of the groups that's involved is the Communist Party of Switzerland. They say that they are intensifying their fight for democracy and called for the unbanning of all political parties.
Sorry. The Communist Party of which country? Don't look now.
Swaziland, sorry.
The king had a point.
the Communist Party said, quote, this is a barbaric act by Mswati's police and is a clear indication that the regime is getting more desperate to cling to power. This is talking about the police cracking down on protests. Mswati, who rules Swaziland as Africa's last absolute monarch, will go to extreme lengths to preserve the regime, which has ruled with an iron fist since 1973. We call on all workers, faith-based organizations, and progressive movements to intensify the fight for democracy now. So, a lot of turbulence. We'll see whether anything comes of it. This is not the first time that there have been serious protests against King Mswati's autocratic rule in Swaziland. But he has survived them all in the past. And, of course, the Swazi royal family has remained in power for a very long time. So we'll have to see what happens. But, Sarah, let me go to you to start off with. Firstly, do you think it's likely that Mswati may lose power at some point? Maybe in this round of protests, maybe in a future round of protests? And if so, would that be a good thing?
You know, I mean, as you say, there have been protests on and off during the years, and they've usually been fairly carried out with a certain level of dignity and process, which, of course, hasn't served them well because Mswati, like any autocratic ruler, will dealt with them accordingly. And you really got a sense after each one that they had been quietened for a period of years, which has been the case. It's been quite a few years, been this outbreak and previously. I think what's slightly different this year is the sense that they really are prepared to cause damage, and they're burning shops that are apparently owned by Mswati. They, as you say, it's trucks from South Africa. It's really a level of violence we're more used to than the Swazis. Whether that will ultimately unseat him, as you say, it's not a diverse, ethnically diverse country. The Dlamini family has always been in power to a greater or less extent in Swaziland or Eswatini. But the rumor that he's in might have fled to Santa. Now that's unconfirmed, but if that is the case, then something indicates that it's bigger than it has been in the past. There's never been any sense of threat that he had to leave the country for before. But of course, you know, there's also a generational element like there is in this country, and that is that whoever, you know, was a young adult when he came to power, they are now older. There's a young generation. There's poor economy, not a lot of jobs. So, you know, you probably don't have quite that sense of obeisance and allegiance. And of course, those things can make a difference. What you're going to end up with, I'm not entirely sure, because the whole government and everything related to politics in the country has revolved around Mswati and the Dlaminis. So whether anyone could really take over, how it would be done, very difficult to say. There's no history to go on. So unless there are fairly powerful people within government or within the political realm who are prepared to sort of take up the mantle, it could just burn out like previous riots. But, you know, the problem is he has been such a man of such excess. I mean, just disgustingly excessive in a country both that size and that poor. That I think is the sort of thing that would enrage the young in a way that it didn't 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, the huge number of wives that he has, the constant spending on himself, one can imagine why communism in such a circumstance would be attractive. Herman, your thoughts on this and your thoughts on if Mswati goes, what comes next? I mean, presumably his regime won't last forever, even if it goes on for longer than he is around. Eventually something will pass him.
Yeah, I must say this is sort of a historical anomaly. It's a story out of a different era. A king possibly fleeing, for what it's worth, the acting prime minister Themba Masuku has recently issued a statement denying that the king has fled the country. But it's such an anachronistic set of circumstances, because traditionally, if one looks what a monarchy is replaced with, you have this idea of a strong civilian, you know, either communist of the people, workers class revolution, or a bit of liberal democratic bourgeoisie coming to power. Now, the problem is, I don't think Eswatini really has much of a bourgeoisie and much of a middle class to speak of. So if the king were to fall, I don't think we will see liberal democracy flaring up there. But what also makes it difficult, and what makes the monarchical position untenable, I think, for him, is oppressive regimes like North Korea keep the flow of information incredibly secure for, I think, a few reasons, but one of those reasons being the esteem economy and your esteem allegiance within it. Because the internet, Facebook, Twitter makes it possible for people to find non-traditional, non-ethnic, non-cultural allegiances that they invest in more. So I think the problem is, if you've got a country with even a hint of technological internet, you know, access, it becomes difficult for symbolic institutions like the monarchy to assert its unifying, identity-giving, definitional role, simply because there are other things, there are so many other factors that can now define what's important to the individual in life. And I think in young people especially, you don't have that symbolic loyalty to a monarchical system. I think you have increasingly a younger generation seeking to, whether they know it or not, enjoy a quote-unquote westernized way of life, perhaps a bit non-traditionalist in some cases. So I think if the king falls, I'm not going to hold my breath for some sort of spurt of democracy. And I also think the king faces an anachronistic challenge of being a symbol in an era where symbols are being degraded and degraded and degraded, just simply because of the overabundance of other symbolic identities on, you know, on the shelves available.
I think that's a very good point, actually. What's interesting about all these absolute monarchies, and there's a couple of them that kick around, they all have to survive in very peculiar ways. So the closest one to Swaziland probably is Bhutan, I think. And I think a little bit like I think Bhutan is a little bit the same as Swaziland, in that it basically keeps a lot of its economy. It's something that comes from outside. I mean, Swaziland is essentially almost part of South Africa, in the way its economy works and the way that so many of its people live and work here and basically send money back. And so that release valve was presumably why they've managed to, why the Swati families managed to maintain control for so long. The only other countries that have managed to do this are places in the Gulf, which have an enormous amount of oil money.
And also a theological component to its monarchical system in many cases. So it's a stronger symbol because it's not just, you know, national identity. It's also a religious identity.
Yeah, the House of Saud in Saudi Arabia is the custodians of the holy mosques in Mecca and Medina. So we don't have time to talk about Ethiopia now, but Sara, I think I'll go to you with any closing thoughts on this before we wrap up.
There's not really much to add. It's because the reason it's difficult to call is because, I mean, he came to power as a very young man. I think he was in his very early 20s, if that. So he's been
18.
In power.
I think he was 18.
He was very young, 19 or something like that. So he's been in power for a very long time, and his father was in power for a very long time before that. So certainly there are no Swazis who have not lived solely under this absolutist monarchy. So it would be influences of the type that Herman has mentioned that would have an impact. But again, it's very difficult to tell whether the homogeneity of the society will help it to transition if it ends up being in the position to, or whether it will hinder it because you've still got this single Swazi entity, and everyone is a Swazi. So it's very, very difficult to tell. I haven't heard much about Swaziland for the last few years. Nothing's particularly piqued my interest. So I have no sort of good sense of how the ordinary people of Swaziland are feeling, other than, you know, pissed off, which they are periodically. But as I say, I think the violence has some sense that this is a bit different. But, you know, maybe even my memory's gone a bit long on that.
Indeed. And we'll have to see. Fun fact about him, apparently at least two of his wives, according to Wikipedia, are appointed by the state. So he doesn't actually get to choose them, which is quite interesting.
That's anyway. Why he's taking others, that he can choose.
Exactly. That is all the time we have for today. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please share it, like it, comment, subscribe, all those good things. And we will see you tomorrow for the Daily French Show. Cheers, everyone.